This is Lori Prox here with Dr. Kathleen Todd of the Valdez Medical Clinic and a doctor at Providence Valdez Medical Center here in Valdez. Thanks for joining us once again. I've got a lot of comments. People are appreciating your information about COVID-19 and how it relates to Valdez. So appreciate having you call in, or I called you. And so we talked a bit about contact tracing, and I think we wanted to revisit one of those topics. And one of those was the fact that there is a quarantine period for someone who tests positive for COVID-19. And then it's actually a little longer quarantine period for somebody who is a close contact of someone with COVID-19. And you wanted to revisit that. So let's start there.
Well, you had mentioned that it's nice for people to know the reasons behind things, and I think that helps a lot. When people think it through and they know what's behind it, they can say, oh, okay, those are the people that I need to warn or whatever. And I will say that the contact tracing is way behind, as you can imagine. If you look at how many cases there are around the state, those guys are going crazy. And so sometimes they're not as fast as we'd like them to be. So if we can be in quarantine already, when they call, it really helps to not have exposed more people. So the weird thing about this virus that's a little bit different than the flu or a cold or whatever is that people actually are just as contagious or even more for the 2 days before they come up with symptoms. So, you know, it'd be nice to be able to just check everybody's temperature, and if you don't have a temperature, you're home free. But you actually could be the person that is about to get it. We don't think that totally asymptomatic cases, people who never get any symptoms, they probably aren't that contagious. They are contagious, but just not as bad as the people who are coughing in your face. But there are people who are going to get it the day after tomorrow, who are really contagious. That's the thing that makes it very hard to deal with. And so when you find somebody who is positive or who has an illness that looks so much like it that that you're pretty sure that that's what they have, you'll notice in the statistics from the state that there's some people in the hospital in Anchorage in the ICU that they're pretty sure have COVID, but the test hasn't come back yet. That, you know, we're going to count those. But if you have somebody who's positive, they need to quarantine right then, but they should have been quarantined 2 days before then. So the contact tracers are going to go back 2 days and say, who were you around for those 2 days before you got your very first symptom? When did you lose your sense of taste or smell?
You said they're more contagious. So is it a higher percentage of contagion just before you might test positive? Is there a percent?
Yeah, they're saying, I don't know about percents, but they're saying that you can definitely catch it from those people, just like on the first day they get their symptoms, you can catch it from them 2 days before that. That's not totally weird. That's true of the chickenpox, too, but the chickenpox is very short, and besides, who cares about the chickenpox? You know, that kind of thing. But this is, you know, you can catch it from people before they get sick.
And Anchorage has a lot of cases, and so their contact tracers are very busy. Here in Valdez, are we keeping up? We have 5 cases, I think 2 recovered. But as I understand, there might be some folks who haven't tested positive here, but they're a close contact maybe, or have been identified of someone from out of town that they had seen.
Right. And we have to remember that not everybody who's exposed to somebody with COVID is going to get the illness, which is fantastic. Also, some of them are not going to get symptomatic illness. And so if those people went back to work, they would be, or to school or to wherever, they would be spreading it around. So they're still in quarantine. And even if they don't test positive, we can't be sure we would not be missing it because we picked the wrong day or because they have an asymptomatic case and they're not shedding that many viruses, just some, just enough. So that's why they're on quarantine for 14 days after their last day of being exposed. So frankly, that's the problem with these tests taking so long to get back, is that, you know, say family member, you know, the mom gets COVID, and she starts to have symptoms on Sunday. Well, then the kids are exposed until the test comes back on Friday. So then do you send the kids to grandma's house, or do they, the kids already have it? Or because then they have to, you know, every kid has been exposed to mom all those days, and their 14 days starts from the day that, the last day that they were with mom. And so it gets really hard to get people back in circulation. And mom is going to be not considered contagious after 10 days if she has a mild case, 20 days if she has a horrible case, but 10 days if she has a mild case. And so mom could go back to work, but the kids are, have still been exposed all the way until they're taken out of that situation. And so that maybe they're already positive. So that they end up being, you know, being home, being on quarantine for a lot longer. And you can tell this is going to be a problem when school starts. They can't go back to school, but she can go back to work. Who's going to babysit? Is the babysitter going to catch it from the kids? You know, it's a dilemma. Everybody says, no, it's not fair. We don't want it that way, but that's the way it is.
And I would assume we're going to have some more cases. You know, everyone keeps saying that, and then, you know, we're waiting for the big hit and hope we're prepared for it. But as we do have positive cases, we talked about hopefully not having a lot of stigma on those because people will have it. And, you know, we have, people have had it here. They've gotten through it and gotten back to their lives. So as people do have it, though, I know there's a huge focus on masks, but it sounds like if you get the call that you've been a close contact, that taking the 14-day quarantine seriously might be, you know, I don't want to compare because I have no medical background, but might be effective as well.
Well, yes, making super sure effective. That those people who, you know, may be shedding viruses 2 days before they get sick, you can't just go by your symptoms is the hard part. It's not like, and that's all we have to go on with people who are, you know, this person who has COVID, their test is positive. Oh no, I went to this big gathering 2 days ago, right when I was starting to be contagious. All of those people that were at the same garden party with them were exposed. We hope not very much. We hope not, you know, we hope they don't get sick. But if they start losing their sense of taste and smell and getting a cough and running a fever and feeling fatigued, they should definitely get tested instantaneously. But, and they should take themselves out of circulation. But the question, you know, you just can't take all those people, but they're, so those are the people who are looking for symptoms. That's because that's the best you can do. But their family members need to be actually in, or the people that they were 15 minutes face-to-face without a mask, those people definitely need to be in quarantine until we can say they're not going to get it in a symptomatic contagious fashion, and that unfortunately takes 14 days. The average is that the mode of when people get sick is between, if you were exposed today, you caught it, the time you get sick is between 2 and 14 days, but the most common is within the week. And but if you got exposed right now, there's no reason for me to attest on you 2 minutes from now because it won't turn out positive. You got to wait a while. And how long is a while? Well, that's kind of gray also. But a while is probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 days. And so don't rush right down to get a test because you're exposed. Quarantine yourself because you're exposed. Get the test, and if you get symptoms or a few days later, and your doctor can help you figure out what's the best time to get the most information.
And what would you do if you had COVID? You have a different, I shouldn't ask you in your workplace, but like say in a normal office setting, if there is a case of COVID, what would you recommend in terms of what should be done in order to protect coworkers?
So it kind of depends on what kind of workplace you have. If you're a mechanic and you work all by yourself, but you hit the break room and everybody eats lunch together, then all of those people could have been infected by you sitting around and with your mask off because you get your sandwich in your mouth. So all of those people in the break room. So if you have somebody who's who's positive in your workplace and you eat lunch with them every day, probably those people need to contact a doctor and see how, and quarantine themselves until they can talk to public health or a doctor. If you're using the same tools as other people, you're not, you know, you're never breathing in their face, but you're using the same tools, you probably ought to clean the tools. We know that, I don't know about oil, whether that's a good disinfectant or not, but we know that it sticks around on stainless steel for 5 days if you don't do anything. And it sticks around on cloth a little bit less, but, you know, it basically sticks around on the things that you have touched. So, yeah, somebody needs to take disinfectant to the coffee maker and the keys that get passed from hand to hand and all those things that the person would have been touching before they found out that they had it.
And a lot of places you hear, well, they shut down for 2 days. So is that necessary, or is it just really about the cleaning and whenever it's done, it could be done?
Yeah, we don't think that it hangs out in the air for 2 days unless there's been special things going on that would have generated more, you know, probably like the people at the hospital clean after, I think it's 5 or 6 hours. We actually clean faster because they go in there with suits. But in a homeless shelter or something, they're saying if you've had somebody, that give it six hours to clear out, especially open the windows and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But the air is going to be okay. It's that they're going in there and doing every surface. You know, yes, you clean your break room, but not like that. You know, like every single, everything.
So that's the important thing is cases come in, clean every surface. So people who are looking for something to do want to be proactive about this. I mean, being meticulous about, even right now, if you've, in any time, cleaning every single surface. I think sometimes the focus has kind of maybe gotten away from that a bit, but that still could be potentially a very important thing as we move ahead, keep moving ahead with folks getting positive results, right?
Yeah. You know, at first people were saying, gosh, I got to let my mail sit for several days just in case somebody sent me something and it still has COVID by the time you get... You know, you can decide that that's a little paranoid maybe, but because it doesn't last on cardboard more than about a day. And maybe you take the outside box off of your Amazon order and then wash your hands. And that might be just as good as letting it sit on the porch for a week. Probably better. But yeah, all those things are, you know, when the kids go back, we were hoping everybody has their own crayons so that they don't pass the crayons back and forth with germs on the crayons. Those things are important. And so, yeah, workplaces could do that proactively.
And I'm curious because I did read through the contact tracing papers and it doesn't really discern between time. It definitely has limits. Hey, if you were around a person for X amount of minutes, blah, 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 as a criteria, but it doesn't discern masks. So is that something, and I know I've heard that that's a consideration locally. So is that, and I understand the medical science that if you wear a mask and there's percentages, you're less likely to transmit and get COVID depending on who's wearing a mask. But in terms of contact tracing, and maybe I didn't hear this correctly, but it sounds like if you were in a meeting with somebody and you both had masks on, that you're not going to be considered a close contact. Is that true?
Yeah, or if everybody was far enough apart or whatever. It, as you say, it's all a matter of probabilities. And so if you get the probability down low enough, you can't, I guess you can say everybody has to stay in their house. Everybody has to stay in their house. And nobody goes out at all. Well, then we'll all starve. So you have to take some chances in this world or everything grinds to a halt and we all starve. So the question is how you can get that low enough, and the public health people have to draw the line somewhere. Why is it 15 minutes or 10 minutes instead of 9 minutes? What's so magic about that last minute? No, it's just a matter of the probability.
But if you're maintaining 6 feet of distance and wearing a mask, you are probably lowering your chances of being considered a close contact.
Right. So, for instance, if I were at the school board meeting and everybody's 6 feet apart and everybody's wearing a mask, the one person in the audience that comes in and says, I have COVID, I'm spreading it to all of you, and stands behind the plexiglass and does that, I am not going to go out and get a test a week later.
Because, and that's a good, you know, Valdez, we
that
have...
It wasn't as much, it wasn't enough enough contact to make me make it very probable that that I caught it from him. Is it possible? It's definitely possible. Is it probable? No. But if everybody was crowded into chambers and not wearing a mask, then... Or crowded in chambers, even wearing a mask, I might be worried and really looking for symptoms.
And Valdez has a lot of space. So in comparison to Anchorage, there's way more places to be and people to be around. So that's something, I guess, to be mindful of as we look at different things. I know the folks from the Valdez Unified Command spoke at the council meeting last night and talked about, you know, hey, there could be more recommendations from the Valdez Unified Command about regulations and restrictions. One of the council members, I believe, Council Member Scheidt, said that she wanted to kind of know, have information where, you know, what are you using? Where's the, you know, a little more data that they're using to make that decision? Because ultimately, the city council should be making that decision. That was another point, too. She wanted to make sure that was the city council was the person, were the folks making that decision, because that's how our city government
system works.
Yeah, that's how our city government works here. So to that end, I think there's a little shroud of secrecy. You know, understandably, the Valdez Unified Command has more data than the general public. But are you on that committee? It'd be nice to know, you know, who would be making that recommendation? Who is that host of folks? Because if you can't be privy to the data, it's nice to know, you know, like similar with the school board we talked about, you're on the committee that will be making the decision of what level the schools are at. So can we discern who's on that, or are you on that committee for the city that would make a recommendation?
My understanding is that Dr. Alfaro is on that committee at the moment. We've kind of, it's changed hands a couple of times because it was a lot of work at the beginning. I think it's Dr. Alfaro at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's changed a bit. I think we did publish a list of who was on it. I think the city manager, I just saw a cross through on his name, and Nate Duvall, I think is...
Yeah.
I don't know if he's on permanently or part-time or what have you. But anyway, that would be interesting. Maybe I'll give Dr. Alfaro a call and see if we can get some info.
Our preventative measures worked so well the first time around that Alaska had this little tiny wave and then went down to next to zero. And now here we go with a much bigger wave. But, you know, everybody's tired of this. We did that. And we got everything all ready and everybody put their all into it. You know, some people seems like 24 hours a day. And then nothing happened because we did a bunch of stuff right, which is great. But then you go, oh, well, you know, I don't need to, that committee doesn't need to meet twice a week because there's nothing for them to do. It's great that there's nothing for them to do. But until something happens that they need to do something, they kind of say, why don't we not meet for a while? So I think that's what's happening at the moment. And they're going to have to, you know, the school needs to have a committee and be ready because a bunch of stuff is about to potentially happen. I hope nothing happens, but we need to have the committee ready now, not back in the spring when the governor said schools are closed, period.
And I think a lot of folks are focusing on what we're not doing, what this person's not doing, what that person's not doing. But I like to take a moment and recognize what has been done because, man, I think a lot of businesses, organizations, individual people have really done some great things. I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the restaurants, I think they've done a pretty good job of takeout windows and outdoor seating. And we have a lot of, seems like people have created opportunity out of nothing. I think we have individuals that are sewing masks. We have people delivering, the Beta Club delivering books across the spit. So just shout out to proactive can-do people out there. You know who you are. Because I think as a community, there are a lot of things we're doing right. So I'll give you a moment if you want to recognize folks doing something right. I think we need a little more of that today.
Well, there's a lot of people spending a lot of their own time and money and effort doing that. And even the individuals, I don't usually eat out, but I'm trying to eat out at all the places that have takeout because they really are going outside of their comfort zone and what they've always done in order to keep their business alive. But they're really working for us and give the businesses some credit and try to buy locally, even though it might be easier to do Amazon. That really helps out the community, I think. So it's everybody from the person who buys something to the person who figures out what to sell to the person who gives their money or their money, but also their time to one of these commissions that is important but is not very flashy at the moment.
And certainly there is a huge trickle-down effect. I know here at the radio station, I have a very, very few people who advertise with me, to tell you the truth. Like I have the people you hear on the air, that's it. And they have been, you know, they need to stay in business. And so I think that the general public is doing a really great job of actually saying, hey, I'm going to spend my money locally and really trying to support. And I think that's amazing. So not just groups or businesses, but the community as a whole. I know a lot of businesses have said they have really appreciated other businesses maybe ordering 20 pizzas or because what comes around goes around. I always believe that. And usually my mantra in the summer is, hey, if we get a lot of people here in Valdez, you know, I work on a lot of committees and events and things, then that actually helps the whole economy, which will eventually help me, even if it's not a direct dollar. And so without having that big tourism presence here, the locals have sure picked up the ball and run with it. So,
And it's wonderful that people, for instance, are sewing masks and whatever, and I hope that they get back into that with school coming. If we're doing school in person, every kid really needs enough masks to get to the next laundry time, right? So if you do laundry once a week, it's nice to have 5 masks because even if they don't get lost, you should change it every day. And that's a lot of masks, 600 kids and 5 masks apiece. And a lot of the families can buy those, but some people can't. And you hear about them, you know, the people working to do that for the community, and I hope they keep at it. But there's also the people who just make 10 and give 5 to the family next door. And just helping neighbor directly works too.
All right, so that was a great transition. Let's hit the schools because there's some great info out right now on the Valdez City Schools website. They are kind of doing a tracker of what level we are at, and you're on that committee. So I'll ask you to speak to that and how you're kind of watching. There are 3 different levels at which school will happen. And, you know, one, of course, is less restrictions. And then with medium cases, you kind of go, but there isn't a definitive number of, okay, we have this many cases, we do this. This committee is going to be making a determination of what level schools will be at. So what are you using to make that determination? And you are on that group, right?
I am on that group. We're meeting again on Thursday. It's got some teachers, somebody from each building, somebody from special ed, some medical people, Olivia Foster from the infection prevention of the hospital, Terry Folsom, Dr. Alfaro, and myself. Not Folsom, wrong. That was Terry, the public health nurse.
Lynch.
And Dr. Alfaro and myself. And Sean Arnold. And we're going to discuss things that go beyond numbers. The horrible thing about being in a little place is that statistics don't help you because the swings are too big in statistics. If you only have a few people, either your whole family is sick 100% or nobody and 0%, and you average that up to half of the people are sick. No, you don't. So it's the smaller you get, the less you can go with just the numbers, and more you have to go with, well, what are the cases? If all the cases are in old people that don't have any kids in their home, that's going to be different, for instance, than if all the cases in town are all in children, everybody in each school, you know, that and they all went to birthday parties yesterday, that's going to be different than... So we get to look at the minutia. It's harder. But some of the minutia that we can't really share with the public, Dr. Alfaro or myself or Terry would know about and could summarize without giving out any names or details, but give those kinds of details part of the decision making.
And I understand that the school board did elect to have teachers come back early, but also to pay them as well.
Yes, there are teachers who started this week to go work on the details. It's not just about masks, for instance. It's about how are the kids going to go to recess or lunch, or what lockers are they going to have, so that they only, if somebody's infected, they only affect a small group instead of the whole shooting match. Do we send kids to the bathroom a few at a time instead of just during that 4-minute passing period and everybody's crammed in there? You know, how is it that we can make everything as safe as possible, and how can we do good education if we're having to, you know, have this kid out on quarantine for 14 days? How are they going to keep getting good education anyway? So they called some teachers back to start working on that now, volunteers and from all the different departments and all the different schools, I think that all the teachers are still mandated to be back. I think it's 4 days.
Not mandated, their employment agreement.
Yeah.
Not mandated, right? Their employment agreement states.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Excuse me. Mandate now has a different meaning. But yes, their contract starts before the kids come back. And, you know, there are some in-services that they have to do on, you know, child abuse reporting and whatever, and those may get postponed till later in the year, this year, I don't know, but there may be all kinds of other things to discuss.
And it seems so daunting, but I think it's getting some traction now, and, you know, you just have to start with one thing, figure it out, and keep going, right? And it sounds, I think the cog's moving from what I discern with the interviews with Mr. Arnold. There's still a lot to figure out, but
exactly. And so, you know, definitely it's nice to have lots of heads working on the problem and say, have you thought of whatever? But I hope that everybody, you can't put everything on the top of your list. So I hope that people are, do give their suggestions, but realize that their suggestion may be one of a whole bunch of great suggestions that are all going to get considered in turn.
Yeah. And definite shout out to the folks working this week and going through those, and those who are innovating and solving some problems. We've got, I think, some great folks who can, you know, out of change sometimes comes innovation and some great ideas. So if we're looking
right.
for...
And it is our teachers working on it. You know, people say, well, why didn't the state just tell us? But you really don't want the state to just tell us, because we know what our buildings are like. We know what's been the tradition. You know, it's nice to have our teachers working on what isn't going to work for long-distance learning based on what we learned last spring and what we know that we have in terms of hardware and stuff like that.
Oh, well, great. We'll be keeping in touch with both you and Mr. Arnold, so we'll have updates for school and on Mondays and Wednesdays. So nice to have that contact. And then really the Valdi City School website is a great place to find info. So, and I think all three schools are now open. So if you have questions, but be mindful that all the answers aren't there yet. So I know my kids have been really anxious about certain things, and, you know, I've said, just be patient, because they don't know yet. They're still working out many of the details, but I do appreciate
it. Well, and it's not like there's one thing to know, and once we find out what it is, it will be the same for forever. Unfortunately, this is a changing landscape, and so what you know today might change tomorrow because the landscape changes.
If we learn nothing else, it'll be resilience this year.
Exactly.
I think that's the lesson, I suppose. Well, that's a good place to end. I think we went through many things, unless you have something to add.
No, I think that's a great place to end.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us once again, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.